Live from Chicago, this is Dan Prof, substituting for Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, we're featuring commentary from Pat Hughes, Professor Charles Lipson, and radio talk show host Vicente Serrano. Our program is coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in beautiful downtown Chicago, where our toll-free phones are now open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. And our website is www.beyondthebeltway.com, where you can follow along on our live stream. Thank you so much for joining us. Let me just do a quick and brief introduction of our panelists, going from my left to my right. Not that that means anything ideological. Vicente Serrano, he is a radio talk show host, Censura, 7:50 a.m., 8 a.m. to noon, Monday through Friday. Vicente, thanks so much for joining us. Charles Lipson, of course, frequent guest on Beyond the Beltway. I've been on the other side of this microphone with Charles many a time. It's always enjoyable. Hailing from Marks, Mississippi, as he does, rising all the way up to be a political science professor at the University of Chicago, if that is still considered an accomplishment, and I'm not sure. And then Pat Hughes, conservative Pat Hughes, he is the co-founder of a C4 in Illinois called Illinois Opportunity Project, which is in the business of recruiting and developing both candidates for local and state legislative office, as well as advocating for free market-oriented public policy. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us. Let's get right into the presidential politics. And Bruce Dumont contacted me. He couldn't be here tonight, of course, but he did say, please, please, whatever you do, do not spend 2 hours on the metric system. So that is going to preclude a deep discussion of Lincoln Chafee's candidacy for president of the United States, the former senator and governor of Rhode Island. But we did have a former three-term governor of Texas and a former presidential candidate, Rick Perry, jump into the race this cycle. We had a number of candidates in Iowa yesterday for Joni Ernst's Ride and Roast, or Roast and Ride, some kind of fundraising event where Iowans convene to listen to the erstwhile candidates. And so I just wonder, at this stage where you've got 10 Republican candidates in, you've got Hillary Clinton and almost like a hand-selected group of opponents in for her, where you see the race shaping up, both on the Republican side and the Democrat side. We'll start with Vicente.
Well, isn't it interesting? 10 Republicans and Hillary Clinton.
Well,
that's supposed to mean.
Yes, well, yes.
Well,
on the Democrat side, they have to go to Canada to get, American expats.
It was on the Republican side.
Well, American expats living in Canada. I mean, Lincoln Chafee said he lives in Canada.
It's interesting how many people are coming on board and saying, I want to take a shot at this. And unfortunately, it seems that not many are willing to discuss issues and be serious about it. It's how I see it. And unfortunately, as I said, particularly in the Latino community, because I do the show in Spanish Monday through Friday.
You've learned Spanish?
I'm not the Marco Rubio type of Latino or the Ted Cruz type of Latino. And we discussed this.
Or the Jeb Bush type of Latino.
Right.
Yes, right. Right.
And we discussed this. I mean, when are these people are going to get serious and talk about the important and relevant issues for the American society?
Charles Lipson, your take?
When you have a lot of candidates in the race, one of the first thing you have to do is kind of identify a few big issues that will differentiate you from the pack. But I actually think a lot of them have been fairly serious. As for Lincoln Chafee, I think before you criticize him, you should walk 1.6 kilometers.
Boy, I set it up and he spikes it.
You know, yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
I would say that Rick Perry doesn't get a second chance to make a first impression.
He does or does not?
Does not. I think
Because
people formed an impression that he is not intellectually capable of doing the job. That may be a false impression, but he certainly managed to persuade a lot of people that it wasn't.
You know, Pat Hughes, conservative, I wonder what your take is on Rick Perry, because it seems to me that based on his record as governor of Texas for 14 years, what Texas has done during his tenure, particularly during the Great Recession, in terms of job creation, as well as on a number of other metrics, with in comparison to the rest of the nation, his record, even if you don't like his rhetoric, his record almost demands consideration.
I like his rhetoric and I like his record. I disagree slightly with Charles. I think he will have a chance to make a second impression. It's a very crowded field, and I think a much deeper field than when Perry ran the first time around. So he's going to be challenged by Rubio and by Walker and by Jeb Bush and maybe a few others. But, you know, the American public is forgiving. Hillary Clinton is getting about a ninth chance, and she's running away with the Democratic nomination right now. I think on the Republican side, we tend to be a little harder on our candidates. But I like Perry, and I like his opportunity in the second.
I want to say one thing positive about not just Perry, but about the Texas Republican Party that I think goes to a point that the Vincente was raising, which is
I love that Vincente.
It's the Marks, Mississippi accent.
Yeah.
It's a lot better than Pat.
I can say it is about a six-syllable word. The Texas Republican Party ought to be sharply differentiated from the California Republican Party. The California Republican Party has managed to alienate the Hispanic constituency, and you can ask yourself why and think it's wrong or right or wrong, whatever, but that has made them a permanent minority party. The Texas Republicans in the last gubernatorial race got 44% of the male Hispanic vote and over 40%, I believe, of the overall Hispanic vote. That is to say, they have not alienated that constituency. They get large numbers, and there's a reason they do. They haven't attacked a number of the key issues that are important to Hispanics.
And what about the Vicente? I mean, Rick Perry, no fortunate son, grew up basically a dirt farmer in the panhandle. Served in the Air Force. That's one of the other things that's not talked about enough. I mean, other than Lindsey Graham, he's the only candidate in the race who actually has military experience. That used to be something that was important. So what about maybe it's not Rubio or Cruz that's the Latino candidate on the Republican side? Maybe it's Rick Perry.
But also remember that Rick Perry took some anti-immigrant measures as governor of Texas. And unfortunately for Rick Perry, if immigration takes a more important role in these campaigns, he's not going to get a second chance, at least.
Well, you can assume it will take an important role because Hillary's already said she favors.
Even Hillary should be criticized for changing positions
all the time.
She said this particular issue.
Whatever your position is, Hillary Clinton has had it over the last decade. Isn't that right? Is that a fair statement?
Let's talk about immigration.
More positions than the Bhagavad Gita.
Boy, you are hot tonight.
Thank you, my friend.
I love it.
Thank you.
No, but so let's talk about immigration. Well, let's start with this question, which is the Latino vote, as it's always described, like the woman vote? It's not monolithic.
Nope.
Different Latino ethnicities have different viewpoints. If you've been here, or if you're first generation, second generation, third generation, you can have very different viewpoints, including on, path to citizenship. Isn't that fair?
And don't get confused when you talk about Latino candidates. In the Latino community, are very hesitant to even look at what Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz have to say, because they don't represent, for many, I'm not saying for everybody, but for many, the Latino agenda, whatever that means. Ted Cruz, very conservative. Marco Rubio, very conservative. Actually, anti-immigrants in their positions. It's not going to play well with the Latino vote.
We're going to get Pat Hughes. We'll give Pat Hughes a chance to respond to Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz being called anti-immigrant right after we take this break. We're taking your calls, 1-800-723-8289. Dan Proftin for Bruce Dumont, Beyond the Beltway.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Good evening, Dan Proft. I'm in for Bruce Dumont on this installation of Beyond the Beltway. We're taking your calls, 1-800-723-8289. We're talking presidential politics. We're already getting into it, a bit of differences of opinion on the Latino vote, its potential, how much it is potentially in play for Republican candidates in particular, and which candidates could maybe make a best play for that, thinking about who could be the Republican Party's nominee in the general. Before the break, Pat, Vicente Serrano said that Rubio and Cruz, they're seen kind of as Cuban candidates, the Cuban experience, not necessarily the larger Latino experience, and that their legislative record suggests they've actually been anti-immigrant.
Yeah, the idea that Cruz and Rubio are either anti-immigrant or not, you know, attractive to the Hispanic population is confusing to me. It kind of reminds me of when that person said about Sarah Palin, the pretense that she's actually a woman, right, because she wasn't on women's issues. And I also think it's a mistake for Rubio and Cruz to specifically address their candidacy as it relates to immigration only. I think what the Hispanic vote would be interested in going forward is, you know, what is the condition of the economy? What is the condition of their kids' opportunities to go to school? What is the condition for them to have a chance at a better life than, you know, the life they had for their children? I think if they talk about those issues, that's something that all people will react to. And I think the Hispanic population in particular will react to that positively. But I think it's a problem. You know, we're always playing identity politics, particularly the Democrats. And then finally, the Republicans are showing that they can branch beyond the sort of, you know, old white Republican comment that people make. And then people are being criticized for not identifying with a Hispanic politician on our side of the aisle. And I think that's a mistake, and I don't think it's fair.
And Vicente, one thing, though, too. And Marco Rubio, I mean, he was part of the original Gang of Eight, and he took a lot of heat for that, trying to advance some version of a pathway to citizenship.
Yeah, but you were saying Hillary Clinton jumping on the issues. Marco Rubio is one of them on immigration. He was part of the group of eight looking for a good proposal for immigration reform, and when it was not good for him, he pulled off. And let me say something. Don't expect a large Latino vote going to someone that is willing of deporting my cousin, my father, my grandfather, my friends. That's how I see many in the Latino community.
I haven't heard many people talking about deportation, but I'll tell you what I think that the difficulty for the Republicans is in as they go forward, and this is reflecting on what the last campaign was like. I think that they won't be, during the primary, doing much to address the Latino vote. They don't have to. It's not a huge portion of the question is whether in the process of trying to win the primary base, they say things that will permanently alienate that vote in the general election. But that's what I saw Romney doing when he ran to the right of Perry in the primaries, not in the general, but on immigration in the primaries. So I would say the key issue for Republicans is not whether they make a direct appeal to Hispanics in the primary, but whether they lock themselves into positions that make it hard for them to make that appeal in the general election.
Well, we've heard
exactly what they're doing.
Well, we've heard from Jeb Bush. I mean, Jeb Bush has talked about, I mean, he was somebody who enjoyed popular Latino support as governor of Florida. He considers himself a Latino, apparently, according to paperwork he's filled out to vote in Florida.
Rubio, just hope he didn't get a speeding ticket.
Rubio and Cruz consider themselves Latino, too.
Well, I mean, they are Cuban ancestry. I guess I don't know what these definitions mean anymore, these terms mean in terms of definitions. But what about this issue of staking out positions that you're talking about? Because many candidates have said, because it's going to be an issue in a crowded Republican field, who's serious about border control? So let me ask this question. When Jeb Bush and others have said, kind of, we need to move away from anchor babies as the means of immigration policy. We need to move towards the H-1B visas and people that are going to come here to work and not access welfare benefits. You know, what's the message that sends? How is that message being received? And frankly, can the Republican Party, no matter what they say, make a real appeal for anything approximating the percentage of the Latino vote that George W. Bush got in 2004?
I think so, and I will say something that I say on the air on my show, and it doesn't it is not well received in the progressive agenda. The reality is that the president that was the closest to approve or have this immigration reform a reality was George Bush, George W. Bush. The one that gave out the amnesty plan was Ronald Reagan.
Right,
unfortunately,
86, right.
What the so-called pro-immigrant leaders don't tell the Latino community is that the Democrats are the ones hitting hard on immigration. We started building the wall with Bill Clinton. We have the deporter in chief right now. And are you going to tell me that we don't see this? And I think Jeb Bush will be, depending on what he says during this primary, I think it will be someone that the Latino community will
But if that's true, if everything Vicente says is true, which it turns out to be true, Bill Clinton started building the wall, the importer in chief right now, and it doesn't matter in terms of the distribution of Latino vote, then should Republicans treat it, and I don't, you know, but let's just be frank about this, realpolitik, should the Republicans treat it essentially like the African-American vote? Look, this is something we can't get, we have to minimize the damage, and we shouldn't focus on these issues.
I think that would be a catastrophic error.
Okay.
I think that the Latino community is probably more like the Italian community over a long sequence. That is, they come in and they need a bunch of services. They're in city areas. They look to sort of patronage-based systems. As they integrate into the system over time, their politics change as their social class changes. That's not true of all ethnic groups. The traditional joke about Jews is that they live like Episcopals and vote like an immigrant group. But the fact is, I think that the Hispanic the way we make a mistake about the Hispanic vote, I'd be interested in your views and yours too, Pat, is I think that we lump it together, not just we lump it together in Mexico and in a Puerto Rican, but we lump together the generations. That,
correct,
I think, is the biggest change. A third generation is a heck of a lot different from a first generation.
Let's go to our phone lines, and we're taking your calls, 1-800-723-8289. We've got Mark in Monterey, California, joining us on KION. Mark, are you with us?
I sure am. Thanks very much. A couple things real quick. First off, I think when people say, well, Republicans are anti-immigrant, it's as if the term anti-immigrant is solely used to define Latinos when there are lots of people who are immigrants in this country, and I don't think the Republicans are necessarily against them. But, you know, the one thing I don't see Republicans doing that I think might be a way to get better into that community, into the immigrant community, and a lot of immigrants, particularly Latinos, are lower income, and go to them and say, look, you know, the Democrats, the progressives are the people who deliberately raise the cost of living. They're the reason why gasoline is more expensive. They're the reason why food is more expensive. The progressive agenda takes money out of your wallet. It costs you money. It takes food off your table. It takes the clothing off your kids' backs. Why do you keep voting for people whose policies make the cost of living higher for you?
Thanks.
And I never hear the Republicans do that, and they should.
Thanks a lot for the call, Mark. I appreciate your comments.
Okay.
Pat, answer Mark's question as well as this larger question. Can Republicans answer the question that Mark posed between now and November of 2016 successfully in terms of capturing a substantial portion of the Latino vote?
Yeah, I mean, I think the caller is exactly right. That's exactly how we should be messaging to the Latino vote. What we shouldn't try to do is outflank the Democrats or go to the left of the Democrats on immigration. Progressive policies hurt all minorities, whether it's Latinos, African Americans, single women. Those policies hurt minorities all across the board. And so that's how we should message. And frankly, if we do that, we'll be able to bring enough Latino vote over to win the election. What we shouldn't be doing is abandoning the principles of our party, the core principles that lead to economic growth and opportunity, which I know is why my grandparents came to this country. I'm sure that's why everyone's grandparents and parents come to this country for that opportunity. We are the better party to provide the solutions to opportunity for all people across the board, including Latinos. And I think that's how we attract that vote. But we can't make the mistake of abandoning other voting demographics just to appease that portion either and vary from our principles. That's a mistake.
Vicente.
I will agree that not all the Republicans are anti-immigrant, but I want to hear more Republicans saying, you know what, Stephen King, you're wrong. You cannot be pushing for a legislation to deny U.S. Citizenship rights of the kids born from illegal parents.
Can I ask you about Hillary Clinton, though? I mean, Hillary Clinton, is there something that Latino voters, and I've been asking this question for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I can't really get an answer to it. Is there something Latino voters can't wait for Hillary Clinton to do that is generating support for her? Or is it just going to be that they're going to vote for her because she's a woman and we're going to make history again, quote unquote?
I think many Latinos will support Hillary Clinton because she is the wife of Bill. And they remember Bill as a good president.
And they don't remember him building the wall.
Exactly. And that's what puzzles me. And also, let me tell you something. Hillary Clinton was asking for deportation of these kids that were crossing the border by themselves not too long ago, during the crisis of these Central American kids.
And now we've got the new and improved Hillary Clinton ready for the 2016 cycle. We're going to take more of your calls, 1-800-723-8289. Dan Proft in for Bruce Dumont this evening on Beyond the Beltway. Thank you for joining us.
Angeles, looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Dan Proft back with you. I'm sitting in for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway this evening. You can catch me, a little point of personal privilege, you can catch me in the mornings on AM 560, The Answer, 5 to 9 a.m. Chicago time, where I host a morning show with Amy Jacobson. And also a point of personal privilege, a thank you to Bruce Dumont. I've been on this show as a guest many times, guest hosted a few times, but Bruce was one of the people that helped me get into broadcasting. And so much like all of Bobby Knight's assistants going on to be great head coaches.
I've seen you throwing chairs, Dan. That's it.
That's why I use the analogy. That's precisely why I use the analogy. We're talking presidential politics, and I want to transition from focus on immigration as solely focus on immigration as the issue, and focus on how some of these new Republican candidates, because there are so many and there are more to come, that are just being introduced to the American public, generally speaking, and how they're being treated by the media. Start with you, Charles. When Scott Walker, when he became pronounced as a candidate, as a serious candidate for president, and the front runner in Iowa, at least, if not the front runner generally, what was the first criticism the media raised of Scott Walker? Didn't have a college degree.
Unbelievable.
And now Marco Rubio is perceived by many as that kind of a tier one candidate. And there's an oppo dump piece that the New York Times ran over the weekend.
In 18 years, and the big Marco got four speeding tickets.
I'll try and ask this with a straight face because the New York Times demands that I do. Should Marco Rubio be disqualified for the presidency for getting four speeding tickets in 18 years?
Well, I think he'd be in line behind Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah, right.
The fact is, it's ludicrous. And I listened to the New York Times defend it by saying when you get into the race, all this kind of circus happens. Well, it happens more to Republicans. And I think that the media has actually paid a very heavy price for this kind of bias. It used to not be noticed because they had monopoly control. Now they don't. You can see people call them out. And the fact is, the media, along with virtually every other important American institution aside from the military, has sunk into the toilet in terms of public trustworthiness.
But Pat Hughes, is the media actually inadvertently doing Republicans a favor because they look at criticism of Scott Walker for not graduating from Marquette? They look at Marco Rubio being criticized for a few speeding tickets, and they essentially say, not should I be serious about Scott Walker or Marco Rubio, but should I be serious about you, New York Times reporters?
Yeah, I mean, they don't know who they're – I mean, I know they think their audience is the people on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, right? I mean, the American public doesn't care if Rubio has four speeding tickets, and they don't care that Scott Walker didn't graduate from Marquette. I mean, I have a degree from Marquette. I'm not qualified to be president, but Scott Walker is qualified to be president of the United States. That just shows, and this is to Charles's point, how out of touch the modern media is. They're looking to appease an audience that isn't the American public. The American public is much smarter than this. They're not going to care about that. They're going to care about issues that impact their daily lives. They've all been speeding. 65% of them didn't graduate from college. So to me, they're doing the media is doing themselves a disservice, and I think in some way helping. And the one other point I'll make is the louder the cries are about Rubio or about Walker, the more nervous the Democrats and the people on their side of the aisle, like the New York Times, are about their candidacies. So the more we hear about that, the more you know how serious those candidates are.
Vicente, it strikes me that there's a dynamic going on in American politics right now, and I ask everybody to jump in on this, but I'll start with you, Vicente. And that is this kind of idea of ruling class politicians versus people who play by the rules. These ruling class politicians who hold themselves above the people, who are not seen certainly
You're
by the—
You're talking about Rahm Emanuel?
I'm talking, right, writ large, exactly. Well, we exported the Chicago model to D.C., so might as well include Rahm there. But the idea is that they're not temporary representatives. They're our betters. At least they think so. And this is why they can exempt themselves from the laws they pass and otherwise lord over us for decades on end. And it seems to me Scott Walker may be a bit of an antidote to that problem that I think a lot of center-left to center-right voters see. What do you make of that?
I agree with you, and also I will say that these politicians think, at least the some of them that you will recognize with what I'm going to say, is that this is politics is a family business. And unfortunately, we have dynasties for whatever reason that you scratch your head and say, how come this guy is qualified? When we're talking about qualifications,
we have dynasties for two reasons. One is that the hardest thing to get is name recognition. And it can be bad. I mean, Rick Perry has total name recognition, but it's not always positive. But Bush, Clinton, people like that don't have to pay for name recognition. They've already got it. And the second and more important thing is that Jeb Bush, Hillary Clinton, candidates like that already have a fundraising machine in place. Nobody's being funded by the party anymore. They have to put it together themselves. And if unless you're Michael Bloomberg, that means you have to win a primary with a constituency of wealthy donors in addition to the primary electorate. So
yeah, but the good news, bad news of that, Charles, yeah, if I can interrupt, is that
sure,
it just takes, in the case of Marco Rubio, for example, it just takes a couple of billionaires to set up a super PAC, and all of a sudden you're not going to raise as much money as Jeb, but you're going to clear the money threshold that you need to clear in order to be a serious
candidate. I agree with that, but I will tell you, I think that there is a real softness in the support for Jeb. He hasn't been able to pull away from the pack. And you just have to wonder, there's Republicans find it very difficult to win when they're perceived as the Wall Street candidate. And Jeb also forfeits another major asset for any Republican in this presidential year, which is you want to run on the plank that the old stuff isn't working very well and Washington isn't working very well. And you can't run against that as a Bush any more than Romney could run against the main issue in the last vulnerability of the last president, which was Obamacare. He just couldn't do it.
And nobody wants to be the front runner. Scott Walker said today in an interview with Jonathan Carl on ABC News that Jeb's the front runner. Everybody wants to be the underdog. Nobody wants to be the front runner.
For the same reason we talked about earlier with the New York Times. You get to be the front runner, you're going to be taking arrows really, really early. And I agree with Charles's point. Rubio and Bush are not outsiders. Bush, for the obvious reasons, and he's weighed down by his family name as much as he's bolstered by it. And Rubio, because he's in Washington, and as much as he wants to be a part of the Gang of Eight or anything else, whereas Walker...
And he's never run anything.
Correct. Whereas Walker has successfully run these elections, the recall election. He's changed his state. He's changed the nature of his caucus in the state. He's shown economic growth in that state. He has a lot to run on as a outsider of Washington and as someone who's governed an entire state.
If he falters, that means that Kasich comes in. There'll be support for an outsider who's a Midwesterner, and Kasich also has Washington experience. But somebody's going to take that position, I think.
And I think Walker more likely than Kasich.
Let me go back to the coverage, because we're talking about candidates, and I think it will be a good opportunity for us in the media to think, to make a balance or a reflection of what we're doing, because it's embarrassing that we're focusing on four tickets in I don't know how many years. I didn't even read the story, because those are the articles that make the public lose credibility. I mean, we lose credibility with the public, and unfortunately, coming from such a big newspaper like the New York Times, it makes it even worse. And I disagree about the college degree. I think that's important. For me, it's important
that he has one.
That he should have one. And
he left college. He left college a semester short to go work, and that's a problem.
Excuses? I mean,
well,
if I don't finish college, I will find an excuse to explain my.
I mean, how does that measure up against his record in public life, including his last 5 years as governor of Wisconsin? Which is more important?
Definitely his experience, but when you're using as an excuse that 60-something percent of the American society don't have a degree, that's.
I think what people
want
to know about that is there a reason that's kind of below the surface why he might have left that was not good. But I think what most people want to know about college degrees is the question I was raising about Perry. Does this person have the intellectual capacity to grasp the difficult issues that the office presents? And I think Scott Walker does.
For example, the college degree, it's very, very important to me when I'm trying to get many Latinos to graduate, because
we have a
huge situation in America with graduation rates. And when you tell them you have a shot at making it to the White House without a college degree, you're sending the wrong message.
Well, I understand the desire to make the case that education is the gateway to opportunity. That makes
perfect sense.
But I mean, in the
isn't it?
It is. But okay. In the political realm.
It did not work for me.
nor me. But in the political realm, aren't we getting to a point now that Bill Buckley observed generations ago that he would rather be governed by the first 1,000 people out of the Boston telephone book than the entire faculty at Harvard? Aren't we getting to that after all of these uber educated politicians? And I'm not just talking about President of the United States, but uber-educated politicians on both sides of the aisle. And it turns out, how good are they at their chosen course? How good are they at representing the public's interests as opposed to their own interests? How good are they at coming up with innovative ideas to solve some of the intractable problems that we face in American society in the 21st century? I don't think the record is great because you have that credential from an Ivy League school, or Northwestern in my case, or some professional degree. I just don't think it holds up to scrutiny.
I'm frankly exhausted by the Ivy League presidential marching orders that, you know, these folks have to be educated at the Ivy League. I mentioned it before. I have a degree from Marquette University. Scott Walker doesn't. I think he's way more qualified than I would ever be. So I don't think that's a big issue, and it's not an issue for the voters.
More presidential politics, including Rand Paul, the candidate we haven't talked about yet, but he made big news and got a big victory this week. We'll talk about him right after this. Dan Prof, and for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Dan Proft, and it is my distinguished honor to be sitting in for Bruce Dumont this evening on Beyond the Beltway. Bruce will be back next week at the regularly scheduled time. We're talking about presidential politics. We've mentioned a number of candidates on both the left and the right, mostly on the right, because that's where all the action is, if we're being honest with ourselves. But in terms of Republican candidates, Rand Paul had a big week. He had a big week. Now, admittedly, he had a big week, mostly taking his party and his Senate leader to the woodshed and the revision to the Patriot Act he did in the form of the USA Freedom Act. But your assessment of Rand Paul, with this heightened importance that national security and foreign policy plays in this primary season, your assessment on Rand Paul's chances, was his victory this week a Pyrrhic victory, or is this a victory that allows him to springboard to a real inside track to the nomination, Pat Hughes?
I think it's a Pyrrhic victory. I think he went against his party. I also think he went against common sense in the world that we're in right now. I had an opportunity to introduce Rand Paul at an event last week. He seems like a knowledgeable person. He was certainly a nice guy. But I think that he is just getting closer and closer to no longer being taken seriously as a presidential candidate on the Republican side. So I don't think it was a very good play for him.
And why is that? Why?
My view of it is he is a little bit more of an isolationist than I would like my president to be in, you know, this circumstance and in the world that we live in, particularly when we'll talk about this later in the show, ISIS and everything else that is percolating here in the United States. And I think that's a part of a libertarian bent that percolates among younger people a little bit more. But I think it's a dangerous view to take. And so I think curbing the protections that we have in place in this environment is a mistake. I think standing up to his own party was political a little bit, in my view, to sort of give him a attack against all these other candidates, particularly the ones that are in the Senate, like Rubio and others. So that's my view.
Yeah, but Charles, Rand Paul separates himself from this crowded field that we keep talking about by being the one guy who says, I want to have this conversation about the balance between freedom and security. I think we can achieve a balance. I think we can still have a safe country and take our national security seriously. What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it except that it's like watching, when you were saying pulling away from the pack, it's like watching two trains that are racing, but you know one is on a sidetrack and it just doesn't go to the end. He may have gotten a little attention around this, but we live in a world of trouble, and that's what most Americans are recognizing now. This was in a more appealing platform in the mid-90s. It may have been more appealing before ISIS really got going, but he can't answer how we would handle Russia. He can't answer how we would handle China. He can't answer how we would handle Iran. He can't answer how we would handle ISIS.
Sounds like the current president.
Well, that's right.
That's a qualification.
That's right. But the fact that you could end up being sort of that Hillary could end up as being stronger than you. I said to you before, I thought that Rand Paul had done the nearly impossible. He had nailed his own coffin shut.
Vicente, your view on that? You think Rand Paul is a viable Republican nominee, a viable presidential candidate?
I think that has to do with age. I agree that his message plays well better with the younger audience. But at the end, we know who is the vast majority in the voting bloc, which is a little bit older and more
He also has a deficit in terms of the way he presents himself. People like a happy warrior. They want people who are optimistic and sort of think it's morning in America. Do you think he...
I agree, totally agree with you. We were talking about... I even said Hillary Clinton was looking mad or angry at one point, and she changed that. Someone had to tell her.
She still looks mad. She still looks mad and angry. And I think that, you know, it's a mistake for a Republican to try to woo the youth vote. First of all, they don't come out in big enough numbers to make a difference, purely for Republicans. And I just think that Paul is trying to garner some attention, break away from the pack, and he's getting closer and closer. I don't want to call him fringe, but he's closer to the fringe than he needs to be to stay serious among what I think is a very talented, at least at the top, Republican field.
Yeah, but you have a lot of people, these are not just 18 to 25-year-olds, that have said there should be no political consequence paid by Barack Obama or Democrats for the failure to cobble together and author extended presence in Iraq in 2011, and now Iraq has descended into chaos. The policies in North Africa and the Middle East more generally, Russia, this potential deal to provide a framework to a pathway to a nuclear Iran that the president seems hell-bent on forging. So if the president and Democrats aren't paying a price for that, if Rand Paul can win some early states and cobble together maybe this non-traditional coalition within a crowded field, why is that not viable? You're shaking your head, Charles.
It's just inconceivable that those things can happen. There is a constituency within the Republican Party that's libertarian, and there are a lot of Republicans who understand and agree with parts of the libertarian program. But Rand Paul just doesn't have a broad enough appeal, especially on foreign policy issues. And I just think that it's a road to nowhere.
And I'll tell you what, one of the bizarre things about the Paul candidacy, I mean, we all know of trackers. You know, other campaigns will put a tracker on their opponents to follow what they're doing. Rand Paul actually has another candidate who's his tracker, Lindsey Graham. It seems like Lindsey Graham's sole purpose for being in the race is to take shots at Rand Paul, and they have this kind of side squabble going on. And Lindsey Graham is not a threat to the nomination. Rand Paul is, but it's fascinating to watch that play out, isn't it?
It is. And it's a lot of these guys, it's so funny to see. They have, like, Lindsey Graham has absolutely no chance, right? So why is he running for president? You know, you have to ask yourself, why? What's the value add of that? And it's just so he can be Lindsey Graham candidate for president.
Or maybe someday Secretary of Defense, regardless of which Republican wins. Pat Hughes is our conservative tonight. Charles Lipson, professor of University of Chicago. Vicente Serrano, a radio talk show host for Sin Censura in Chicago. We're going to be back with more right after this.
Raid is here. Come on down to the Museum of Broadcast Communications as we pay tribute to the true advertising icons known as the Raid Bugs. Admission is free during the week of June 2nd through the 6th. So come on down and join us with the whole family at 360 North State Street in downtown Chicago.
Headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a four-diamond hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Live from Chicago, this is Dan Prof, substituting for Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, a roundtable discussion features Vincente Serrano. Vincente is the host of Sincentura Radio at 7:50 a.m. in Chicago. 8 a.m. to noon, Monday through Friday. Vincente, thanks for joining us. Charles Lipson, a frequent contributor to the Beyond the Beltway program, and he is a political science professor at University of Chicago. And our conservative tonight is Pat Hughes, who is the co-founder of Illinois Opportunity Project, which is a 501c4 Koch brothers style, to make it, you know, sound more nefarious, that recruits, supports, develops candidates for state and local office here in Illinois, as well as advances public policies consistent with economic liberty. Gentlemen, thank you all for joining me this evening. Our phone lines are open, 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. We'll take your calls as we continue our discussion about presidential politics, but in a more policy context than we offered up to this point. Let's talk about what happened this week in terms of questions about our national security. You had the Chinese hackers, we believe to be Chinese hackers, obtain access to the records of tens of thousands of federal government workers, including performance reviews, and they must have read those performance reviews and just laughed and laughed. In addition to that, you had what happened in Boston with one suspected terrorist shot and killed by police, another suspected terrorist under indictment. According to information that has been uncovered by law enforcement to this point, they were looking to behead Boston police officers. In addition to that, they were targeting Pam Geller. Pam Geller, who, of course, has made news with her Mohammed cartoon drawing contests in Garland, Texas, and elsewhere. And, Vincente, you mentioned this to me as well. We also had the U.S. Border Patrol helicopter shot down on the border this week. And so I don't know if there's any linkage between all of those things other than they all fall under the umbrella of national security. But given this and given the tenor of discussion in the Republican primary for president right now, how important is national security going to continue to be as a discussion point in American politics? And do these incidents this week suggest that we have much to fear about the world around us? We'll start with Pat Hughes.
I mean, I think if we're serious, we should be fearful. I mean, it shouldn't cripple us, but we have to be aware of it. I think this goes to my point about Rand Paul previously. Yeah, this is sort of the issue that someone like Scott Walker is going to have a little bit of a problem with, right? I mean, how do you have national security experience as the governor of Wisconsin? Whereas someone like Rick Perry, who served in the military, might have a little bit of a different angle with respect to that. And certainly a United States senator like Rubio would be able to talk a little bit about these issues and have some dealings with them because of how he deals with them in the United States Senate. So it's going to play a role. And frankly, I think these folks that don't have direct national experience in national security issues, they need to study. They need to get very sharp about it. I think Walker stumbled early on it a little bit in order for the public to take them seriously, because I think the public is concerned about that, as they should be.
Well, which of these incidents that I just ticked off should be most concerning to us?
In some ways, I think what's happened inside of our own country, because I think this idea of lone wolves who can go out and do things and who are inspired by ISIS or somebody else, that represents something that's new in the way that terrorism has affected us. I thought that the CNN interview, which was an attack interview on Geller, saying, don't you just love being a target and so forth, was just disgusting. I actually think that the idea of drawing Muhammad is an offensive thing. I'm not supporting the idea that it's a good thing to do, but I do think it's covered under freedom of speech. I think it's absolutely their right to do it, just as it's everybody's right to do all kinds of, say all kinds of stupid things. I mean, so I'm not defending it as a substantive point. I'm defending her right to say it, and I think the fact that I would say that President Obama's feckless kind of response to the Chinese hacking and his statement about the islands, well, he said they sort of have something that's right about this, but maybe they're throwing elbows as if this is a basketball game. My God, I mean, this is the kind of weakness that just invites problems.
And Vicente, of those incidents that we talked about this week?
I agree with him, and I will just to make a correction. The helicopter was not shot down. It was just impacted by bullets. According to the authorities, shot from Mexico
right.
to the United States.
Right. I didn't mean to make it sound like it was the Mexican government. Right. Yeah, that's a fair clarification.
And it was not shot down. I mean, we didn't have casualties or anything
right.
like that.
Right.
But they could have occurred. They could have occurred.
Yeah, right. It's an incident that has to be investigated. Also, I would like to mention that because of these situations in our soul, our country, we need to be very careful how the media covers these national security issues, because we don't want people to panic. And unfortunately, we were talking about the coverage that we're giving to the candidates. Sometimes we have failed.
I want to add
on our coverage about these issues too.
I want to add one thing that will have an impact on the southern border. If it turns out that something bad comes in across the southern border that has its origins in the Middle East, believe me, that's going to have a huge impact.
But
right
that's
away.
But that's the problem. We have been listening to some commentators. Maybe there's a possibility, and that has an impact on the other issue that we were talking about, the other topic that I think is way relevant too, which is immigration. Because now we're asking for national security. And in case of something comes from our southern border. But the reality is that many of the threats have come from the northern border, and no one says it.
Well, sure, and there are threats from people who've overstayed visas, where they came here legally and then overstayed their visas. 40% of illegal immigration. But what about not just the southern border in terms of the a potential pathway to do harm to the United States citizens, Pat, but also what Charles spoke of, this lone wolf problem that seems to be presenting itself again and again.
Yeah, the lone wolf problem combined with the southern or northern border problem is what you really need to worry about. And this is why President Obama's policy recently in Iran, allowing them to continue their nuclear program with a 10-year, you know, time when it expires, is the real problem. The existential threat that has faced the United States of America since I've been involved in politics up until this point is a loose nuclear weapon getting out of the Middle East, whether it's Iran or Pakistan or wherever, and coming into our country and getting in the hands of a lone wolf that's connected either loosely or directly with ISIS or any other terrorist organization. So to me, that is the number one threat. And when President Obama goes out and makes deals with Iran that allows them to continue to create capabilities for that contingency to happen, that allows one of our allies, our great ally in Israel, to be targeted, that is, to me, the larger issue and the larger problem. And I think the presidential candidates going forward are going to need to address that problem.
Other national security story that came up this week that really disturbed me was essentially you could put an elephant in your backpack and get it past TSA.
Right. 67 out of 70 bombs and guns through this red team internal review got through.
Why are we taking off?
It's security theater. Security theater at the airports. We're going to be more back with more on this. Also, the balance between personal freedom and national security in the context of cartoon contests. Back with more Beyond the Beltway.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Dan Proftin for Bruce Dumont this evening on this installation of Beyond the Beltway. We're taking your calls, 1-800-723-8289. Talking about national security. It's been an eventful week in the national security front for America with the Chinese hacking incident. At least we believe it's the Chinese. And in particular with what happened in Boston. These two radicalized Islamists who were apparently targeting Boston police officers. They wanted to behead Boston police officers.
This is what happened in London, right? That somebody on the street comes out, beheads a soldier.
Right. And they also were targeting Pam Geller. Pam Geller from American Freedom Defense Initiative, the host of Muhammad Cartoon Contest, among other things. This was the organization. She was the principal that sponsored that contest in Garland, Texas, that where two other radicalized individuals showed up to open fire, and they were shot down by Chuck Norris or some other unidentified Garland, Texas police officer who has not come to the fore, understandably so. And so the question – oh, and by the way, one other thing. A week ago Friday, we had this – rally in Phoenix, outside a mosque in Phoenix, where the two individuals that went to open fire in Garland, Texas, had prayed for some period of time, according to the imam in this mosque. John Ritzheimer, who's a U.S. Marine, served in Iraq, organizes a freedom rally that includes a Muhammad cartoon contest. The event goes off without incident, and the response from our two Muslim American congressmen, that's Keith Ellison in Minnesota, Andre Carson in Indiana, was to say the Department of Justice should investigate Mr. Ritzheimer and his organization and that event. So the question...
What was their theory on why?
The theory, the two congressmen's theory was that some of those who had attended the rally were preventing Muslims from getting into their house of worship. That was the theory. So the question becomes, in these times... where, you know, drawing a cartoon brings out the lone wolves, or maybe not such lone wolves, to potentially endanger not just the organizers, but people that are, you know, in surrounding areas. What should be the response? What is the balance between how we live and our constitutional rights, particularly our First Amendment rights, and the national security interests of communities like Garland, Texas, or Boston, or Phoenix? I put that to you, Charles Lipson.
The first thing I would say is that Europe has almost entirely collapsed, at least at the political level. I see a popular movement to push back. So if the United States does not defend free speech, and I think Canada is now really moving in a strong way to defend these things, nobody will do it. The U.S. and Canada are almost alone out there in defending what would be, I would consider, a traditional achievement, a great achievement of Western civilization. Second thing I would say is that I want the audience to think about the not just the gravity of the threats, but the diversity of the threats that you just talked about, Dan. We talked about cyber attacks. We talked about lone wolf attacks. We've just recently talked about China, Iran, and Russia, which are traditional state power attacks. We're asking our military and our national security teams to protect us from a range of threats that's just unprecedented, in my opinion.
My question is, are we prepared for that? Because you were saying about this situation at the airports. I traveled to Los Angeles a couple of days ago, and it seems that everything is normal. And we have had how many incidents where people were coming in, you know, trying to investigate if our policies were working, our plan was working.
Well, everybody who would try to get something bad on a plane certainly read the news last week, didn't they, that they can get anything on. I actually don't think we're all that
well
protected. But the problem is not that our police and so forth aren't doing as good a job as they can and working very hard. The problem is that the threats are so multifarious and there's so many of them. And they, you know, the old Wilson Pickett song, 99.5 just won't do. They have to get 100.
Yeah, but and against the backdrop of what you've described, people are saying, well, this is why we can't tolerate the Pam Gellers of the world, the John Ritzheimers of the world. We can't tolerate these kind of events because it breeds more terrorist activity, it breeds more violence. And so there are real questions about whether or not this should be protected. These events should be protected.
We have to tolerate the Pam Gellers of the world. I don't agree with doing a Muhammad cartoon contest. It's not my thing. I think the point they're trying to make is, look, we should be able to make these cartoons and not have, you know, certainly violent repercussions. But no, I mean, Charles said it best. Western civilization is based on, and at least in our country, what we call the First Amendment and the freedom of speech and the freedom of association, the freedom for a former war veteran to come and do an event like this. And I think we have to be as vigilant in this environment as we were vigilant on all the threats that have faced us in the 200-plus years
remember,
of our country.
Remember, we've had people put Robert Mapplethorpe's Piss Christ, where there's a cross with Jesus on it.
Andre Serrano, actually.
Andre Serrano, yeah. Dipped in urine, and we've had a number of things from Mapplethorpe. We've had all this kind of stuff. And, in fact, South Park, the cartoon show, did a wonderful thing some years ago where they had introduced a Muhammad character delivering a pizza, only briefly. The Fox Network prevented that from going on, and then right after that, they showed Jesus coming in and just being covered with all sorts of dung and everything. So what they were saying was, look, Fox is not protecting some religion from being denigrated. They're protecting one religion because they're fearful. That's a terrible thing.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, and so are we in our politically correct culture, are we fundamentally misunderstanding the threat, whether it's Salman Rushdie's satanic verses or a Danish cartoonist or events that Pam Geller and John Ritzheimer host? Should we be defending them without a but? Yes, it's their right to do it, but, and then we go on to essentially say their right to do it should be undermined. Should we be unequivocally saying, even if I don't like it, not only should they be able to do it, that's the end of my statement on it. They should be able to do it, and the implications of them exercising their free speech rights is a secondary and separate conversation.
And also, why they do it. I mean, seriously, in this world, in this context, what we're discussing, my point has been is, why? I mean, why is it? I mean, why do we have the need to piss the other side of the world?
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think if these contests weren't held, that it would change anything? That we wouldn't have these lone wolves, we wouldn't have the terrorists, we wouldn't have ISIS?
I don't know. But the reality is that when you burn the for example, a Quran in Florida, something sets off on the other side of the world.
Pat, if we weren't burning Korans, if we didn't have one, you know, lone wolves, to continue the phrase, if we didn't have lone wolves burning Korans, would you think ISIS and some of these other radicalized Islamic terrorists would be saying, oh, you know what, they are actually respectful of our religion, no problem, we're done here?
No, they would just go on to whatever the next thing that they thought was egregious behavior would be, because that's just an excuse for them to do what they want to do, which is exert force towards whatever way of the world they want it to be. And that just gives them some fuel to allow them to do that.
We know what's leading to all this, and that's that Guantanamo is still open.
What is leading to all this?
Joking. That's what our president has said is leading to all this recruitment at the very beginning.
In other words,
it's just ludicrous. What's leading to this? This is inducing them. This is putting cheese, but the rats are already there, right? This is just bringing them out in to the open. What it's trying to show to people.
Why do we want to do that?
But that's not what. That's not
necessarily to do it. But I can tell you that as an American, other people have that right. End of story.
That's not what they're doing. What they're doing is they're trying to move the playing field a little bit, and they're trying to get Carson and Ellison to join their playing field. And if they can do that, then they can start to get into a little bit more of American policy.
Explain what you're saying. I don't understand.
So when you have conversations about whether or not we should have a First Amendment, whether these things should be protected by the First Amendment, whether they can have these rallies, and then you have these two congressmen start pushing back against the First Amendment, those are victories.
No, if what
those
they are saying,
though,
let me
side.
Pat, if what they're saying is only the statement that people were prevented from going into worship. People have a right to go into worship.
That may have been a false statement. They do, but that's pretext. That's all pretext.
In other words, what their only grounds that they have to oppose it publicly is a free speech grounds, and that
a freedom of assembly.
Freedom of assembly.
Right.
So they're
right.
It's the abortion clinic argument
being played out in a different context. Right. It's the same arguments that are being made with respect to Ellison and Carson here. But my point is, we have to allow people to do whatever it is that they can do within the bounds of the Constitution, whether we like it or not. At what point do we get to decide what we like, don't like, what we think is right or don't? That's the whole point of it. And when we start edging against that, it becomes very problematic going forward.
And isn't it incredible that against the backdrop of this conversation, we have the president going on Israeli TV with a message directly to the Israeli people about not having to worry about a nuclear Iran, and saying, according to David Axelrod, that he is the closest thing to a Jew that has ever occupied the White House. I mean, this is more of President Obama. He may not believe in American exceptionalism, but he definitely believes in Barack Obama exceptionalism, because it turns out not only is he only a better policy guy than his policy guy and speechwriter than his speechwriters, but he's also a better Jew than you are, Charles.
Well, he certainly lives close to my synagogue. He lives right across the street about 50 paces, or as Lincoln Chafee would say, he's about 50 meters from the front door. But I would just say it doesn't matter whether a person is a good Jew, good Muslim, good this, good that. We're judging policy consequences. And the consequences of his policy toward Iran are that he defends it on the grounds that it will stop nuclear proliferation, but the Saudis are right now buying a weapon.
More Beyond the Beltway right after this.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Good evening, Dan Proft, sitting in for Bruce Duman on this installation of Beyond the Beltway. Thank you for joining us. You can normally catch me 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, Chicago time, in the morning. I do the morning show for AM 560, The Answer. And rounding out the panel, let's circle the infield here. Let's start with our friend Vicente Serrano, who's a radio talk show host. Vicente, give us your life story in 30 words or less.
Born in Mexico, emigrated to the United States almost 20 years ago. Thank God I have had such a beautiful life in the United States.
Why did you choose God Chicago? Why did you come to Chicago?
Good question.
You ask yourself every January.
Thank God the large community, Latino community in Chicago. After Mexico City and Los Angeles, Chicago is the most populated city in the world with Mexicans. And That might be the answer, right?
And radio and TV, you've been a reporter in a lot of formats. So you're a colleague of mine. You're on 8 to noon, Monday to Friday, on Sin Censura, which is AM 750
correct.
In Chicago.
And I used to be the news anchor for NBC Telemundo here in Chicago for many years. And thank you for having me to discuss such a important issues with the panel.
Great to have you. Charles Lipson, frequent contributor to Beyond the Beltway. He is a professor of political science, raconteur, bon vivant. He is at the University of Chicago. He joins us. What else do you want to share about your personal journey?
I came
from
Mississippi because everybody from my area of Mississippi moved to Chicago.
Is that right?
It is true. When I first moved here in the late 1970s, I had an old car like so many people given to me by my dad, and it still had the old license plate from Mississippi. And everybody who came by the house said, oh, you know, I'm from there. My grandparents were from there. And that was because when I was growing up in the 1950s and 60s, there was a change in agriculture, and many of the black people who had worked on farms were displaced by machinery. And so they came up to Chicago for a better life and for less what they thought was going to be less discrimination and the like. And now we're seeing the second and third generation, sometimes the fourth and fifth generation of that migration. But that's where I originally came from, went to school in the East, and then have been a professor at Chicago.
And at your Yale reunion, your Yale class reunion, what did Jane Pauley whisper in your ear?
Well, we don't like to talk. Did you know the secret handshake? You didn't give it to me, so I'm really not allowed to talk. But I also have a degree from Harvard, and all of this talk about not needing a college degree, it's just envy.
Sure, right.
It's just envy. Yes. That's all it is.
You're protecting the cartel.
That's
it.
Right.
Pat Hughes is our conservative tonight. Pat is the co-founder of Illinois Opportunity Project. Pat, a little bit more of your professional background.
Sure. So I was born and raised in Chicago. First of all, I love hearing a story of an immigrant who comes to this country and shows such an emotion and love for the opportunity that it provides, and it's always great to hear. I grew up in the Northwest Side, went to DePaul here in Chicago for law school, Marquette before that, met my wife in DePaul, and I got involved in politics when I was 40 years old because my 40th birthday was the day after President Obama was inaugurated. I said enough was enough. I ran for the U.S. Senate because of that, and everything else has been a whirlwind since. So I'm grateful to be here with such a great panel. And Dan, thanks for having me.
Thank you, gentlemen. And as Chicago so often is, when it becomes the center of the political universe, there's a political story, a criminal story, the intersection between crime and politics in Chicago. It's so often the bad example, and it seems that we have another case of that. This is Denny Hastert, former House Speaker Denny Hastert, the longest-serving Republican House Speaker in the history of our country, accidental speaker, albeit, but nonetheless.
Came in because of a sex scandal.
Correct.
And stayed in, but stayed in.
And served nearly a decade, served a couple of decades in Congress, but he dates back to being a high school teacher and a wrestling coach, and this is really central to the issue before us and before which he will be arraigned on Tuesday of this week. Facing a federal indictment for violating banking laws as well as for lying to the FBI. On Friday, kind of a bombshell story, the first time an accuser has been named because he is essentially accused of misconduct for which he was paying an unnamed person to keep this misconduct dating back to his time as a teacher and wrestling coach to keep it quiet. And on Friday, we had the sister of someone who was a equipment manager for the team while Denny Hastert was the wrestling coach. He is now passed. He passed back in 1995. But his sister has come forward and said that Denny Hastert had an illicit sexual relationship with her brother for the better part of 4 years. That's probably not the only instance. Again, these are allegations, and that she is not going to see Denny Hastert get away with it. She actually had petitioned news agencies and advocacy groups back in 2006 with the Mark Foley scandal, which has to be looked at in a whole new light given what has been alleged of Denny Hastert now. ABC News essentially confirmed that they did receive that correspondence from this woman. But they didn't pursue it because they couldn't corroborate her story. We also heard this week a congressman from North Carolina was given a rumor that there was something about Denny Hastert back around that same time. Mel Watt, Democrat congressman from North Carolina. There was a rumor about Denny Hastert that was presented to him. No evidence to support it, no corroboration. He didn't pursue it. And so fast forward nearly a decade later, and now Denny Hastert has essentially an accuser, we believe, in Individual A, who's named in his indictment. You've got all kinds of rumors and speculation, and now you've got, as of Friday, a sister of a deceased kid who was there when Denny Hastert was the wrestling coach, making serious, serious allegations.
And one very important silence, Denny Hastert's. We have not heard him say these are false, malicious
Correct.
Accusations.
Well,
we have not heard a lawyer for him come out and say that.
And the other thing that we know from the indictment is that this $3.5 million arrangement between unnamed Individual A and Denny Hastert, the reason this came to federal scrutiny is because Denny Hastert was withdrawing large sums of cash and ostensibly paying this Individual A to the tune of $1.7 million to date. So we've seen false accusation cases before here in Chicago, Cardinal Bernadine and others. But there's something very different about this case in terms of the prospect that the accusations are false.
I want to say something about Cardinal Bernadine because I thought that was one of the most powerful moral statements of our time. He was falsely accused of molesting someone who made the accusation years later, and Cardinal Bernadine, who to me seemed like a very saintly man, denied it strenuously without attacking the accuser. Mm-hmm. And they later kind of reconciled, and the accuser said, I just made it up. But it was such a powerful and emotional, I'm not a Catholic, it made a very powerful statement to me. But from the very outset, he said, this is false. We haven't heard
right.
that from Hastert.
We haven't heard that from Hastert. We heard a colleague, a longtime friend of his, essentially say that Denny Hastert told him he's the victim here. That's not particularly compelling, particularly from a third party. Denny Hastert has not spoke. We'll see if he says anything in his arraignment. But these are serious allegations. You have somebody who spent nearly a decade third in line to the presidency of the United States. And these allegations went unreported
and
for the better part
thing,
of 3 decades.
One more thing about it. I'm sorry to one more thing about it. The people he is accused of molesting were underage and under his authority.
This is,
both
this is,
of those things are just awful.
If true, we could be looking at a Jerry Sandusky case here, Pat. And in Illinois, ironically, on the same day this woman came out I just described, Aaron Schock's offices were raided by the FBI, former Illinois Congressman Aaron Schock from Peoria. So the hits keep coming for the Republican brand in Illinois.
It's incredible. And it's the Republican brand with Schock and Hastert. It's the Democrat brand with Blagojevich and others. It's just terrible. And I think that the $3.5 million, you know, I know he's innocent until proven guilty of these bank fraud charges or whatever else, but frankly, it's hard not to make up your mind. And I think I've made up mine as to what I think is going on here. And to Charles's point, it's, you know, I have a 15-year-old and 13-year-old and a 9-year-old son. You know, you send these kids off to a school where they're supposed to be protected. And when things like this happen, it's terrible. And then when it happens and this man becomes almost the most powerful person in the world and no one wants to speak up, even though there's got to be some percolating thought or comment with respect to it, is really a terrible circumstance. And the reason you haven't heard from him is twofold. Number one is lawyers are telling him not to say anything
right.
because and the likelihood is that's because he doesn't have anything good to say. And they don't want him to have more charges coming along. But it's a very, very sad day for the Republican Party in Illinois, where Hastert heretofore, like Dan said, the longest serving speaker in Republican history, now that has a giant, giant asterisk next to it. And it's sad for the party, and it's sad for politics in Illinois. It's sad for the country.
It's sad, sad
for
politics,
the victims. Right? In general, it's sad. It's sad because we have a long list of public servants that have failed the public, and this probably will be one of the worst cases.
Well, I'll tell you, was something else that's interesting to me too, and this has larger public policy implications, and maybe you start to use better judgment as voters. You know, what you heard in the wake of the indictment and these allegations swirling around, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. Denny Hastert was such a nice guy. You know, I met Denny Hastert and he was a nice guy. I met Denny Hastert. I had interactions with him. He was fine. But you know what? At a fundraiser or at some kind of meeting, I don't expect him to unnecessarily be a jerk. Right. Of course he's a nice guy. You think you meet a politician at a town hall or at a public forum or at a fundraiser and you know them? You don't know them. You think they're a nice guy because he has nice 30-second commercials or because, you know, a friend of a friend said he's a nice guy who has about as much knowledge of this person as you do. This whole, you know, this is a nice person and we buy the image. It's the same reason actually Ta-Nehisi Coates in The Atlantic had a great piece about Bill Cosby. And it was, you know, the Bill Cosby thing is I thought he was, I mean, essentially he said, you know what, I gave him a pass because I treated him like I would treat Mr. Huxtable. I didn't know who Bill Cosby was, and Bill Cosby didn't turn out to be Mr. Huxtable. Same thing looks like with Denny Hastert. Back with more Beyond the Beltway after this.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Dan Proft sitting in for Bruce Dumont on this special edition of Beyond the Beltway. Thank you so much for joining us. My guest, Vicente Serrano, radio talk show host, Charles Lipson, professor of political science, University of Chicago, Pat Hughes, a political and policy operative on the conservative side, free market side here in Illinois. I want to have a little bit of a cultural discussion to close the show because it is you cannot look at a magazine rack and not see Caitlyn Jenner, at least not this week, after her Vanity Fair cover story. She, Bruce, Caitlin, well, I don't know what the terminology is. So I'm since it's just a wig and lipstick, I think I'm just going to call him. You can see him make his first public appearance since this transformation, July 15th, where he is going to receive at the ESPY Awards, the ESPN ESPY Awards, he is going to receive the Arthur Ashe Courage Award.
The what?
The Arthur Ashe Courage Award. He was selected for that honor. What does it say about our culture, Pat Hughes, that we have Bruce Jenner publicly going through this transformation to almost nothing but applause and nothing less than applause will be tolerated?
Well, that's a terrible thing, and that's why the Courage Award is so interesting. It doesn't take a lot of courage to do something that everyone in the media is going to applaud, right? He's gone from, or she's gone from being someone that was sort of on the fringe of pop culture with the Kardashian show to being universally celebrated. And if you don't celebrate what she has done, then there is going to be hell to pay. And it's not courage. Look, it doesn't matter to me what Bruce Jenner wants to do with his or her life going forward. That's her business. But what is troubling to me is that everyone is being forced to celebrate it and that this is somehow courageous when, you know, I'd love to be able to do something that would be considered courageous based on the fact that everyone thinks it's wonderful and terrific. So there's no courage there.
Yeah. Matt Labash in the Weekly Standard today said, call it courage if you want, but it's certainly not your grandfather's Battle of the Bulge, is it? Charles Lipson.
Well, I actually think that when people change their genders, it's something that they must feel very, very deeply. It's not an issue that's done casually. It's not like dyeing your hair pink or something like that. I don't know whether you'd call it courage. I'm glad that people who feel that they are somehow in the wrong gender feel that there's social support for them to do what they want to. I don't know. There was a young woman who raised over $1 million for cancer on her athletic team.
Correct.
and
passed away.
What she did was courage. She had a disease that she knew was going to kill her. She was young, and she wanted to make the most of her life by raising money that would help other people in a similar situation. That's courage. But I don't take anything away from Bruce Jenner. I just think it tells you so much about the modern notion of celebrity in America, where people are famous for being famous.
Is it just celebrity? It is also a certain cultural degradation with respect to gender, with respect to men and women, and that the two – and men are different than women. That's a shocking statement to make, apparently, in this day and age. But is it also gender-related issues, political correctness, rights issues beyond just celebrity?
And I read some – I don't even remember who mentioned this. Welcome to being a woman in America. You know, you didn't think about Bruce. Oh, he's handsome. He's good-looking. Now everyone talks about – how Caitlin,
right.
Is good looking, and oh, how nice she looks. I will say something. When I defend gay rights in my show, I always talk about how much I don't care about what's going on in somebody's bedroom behind doors. Why should I care now about this guy or this woman changing gender?
Well, I'll suggest.
Why is it that we have to do a press conference every time someone has to come out?
Well, I'll suggest that there are public policy implications, and Jenner in his interview with Diane Sawyer suggested some. He's out to change the world. And when you talk about changing the world, one of the things that happens, we see this redound to schools, where you don't have boy and girl bathrooms anymore, or if you do have boy and girl bathrooms, boys and girls, depending on what they feel on a particular day, can use one bathroom or the other. This isn't stuff I'm making up. These are stories that have been reported all over the country. So when you start down this path, start down with redefining, you know, men to be women, there are implications to that redefinition, and it doesn't stop there. The other thing I would say, to your point, Charles, Dr. Paul McHugh, who is the former psychiatry chief at Johns Hopkins, had a great piece in the Wall Street Journal this week, and he essentially said, well, wait a second, are we not allowed to question Bruce Jenner? If we're not allowed to question what is going on in his mind, then we might as well eliminate the discipline of psychiatry, because that's all of what it is. This solipsism. And Johns Hopkins was the first medical institution to do gender reassignment surgeries, and then they assessed the outcomes, and then they stopped, because those people who got those surgeries were not necessarily happier, and you still had a much higher incidence of suicide among that demographic.
Let me tell you something. I was in California a couple of days ago, and I was talking to a transsexual friend, and he told me if it took him so many years to finally come clean and say, I'm doing this, why is it that we as Americans in the society have to admit it or digest it overnight? It doesn't make sense.
Vicente gets the last word. My thanks to Pat Hughes, Charles Lipson, and Vicente Serrano for coming in tonight. Beyond the Beltway is a Genevieve production, produced in association with WCGO Radio. I'd also like to thank Colin Bobbitt, Fritz Coleman, and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in getting this program on the air. I'm Dan Prof, substituting for Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Raid is here. Come on down to the Museum of Broadcast Communications as we pay tribute to the true advertising icons known as the Raid Bugs. Admission is free during the week of June 2nd through the 6th. So come on down and join us with the whole family at 360 North State Street, in downtown Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.